From Airwolf, Magnum PI, and Saint Elsewhere, Native Voices and Days of Our Lives, this is Jean Bruce Scott congratulating you on your excellent taste for choosing this station and podcast.
Jenny Finch, author, creator of The Drowners and Death of the Elver Man, and general Renaissance woman, your host for the Book of the Month.
This month's book is The Loved One by Evelyn Waugh. Written in 1948, just after the publication of Brideshead Revisited, The Loved One is one of Evelyn Waugh's sharpest and most satirical books, as well as being one of the shortest. Set against the background of the Whispering Glades Memorial Park in Southern California, this is a story of love, deceit, and ambition, and contains one of Waugh's most memorable and repulsive characters, Mr. Joy Boy. Joy Boy is the head mortician at Whispering Glades, an upmarket cemetery. Here, the late dear departed are primped, painted, and rendered almost anonymous by Mr. Joy Boy and his team before being laid to rest in the park. There is little mention of death or burial, terms too crude for the sensibilities of the clientele.
If you'll take my advice, just sit easy for a time until something attractive turns up. Don't jump at the first thing. These fellows out here respect a man who knows his own value. Most important to keep the respect of these fellows. We Limeys have a peculiar position to keep up, you know, Barlow. They may laugh at us a bit, the way we talk and the way we dress, our monocles. They may think us cliquey and standoffish, but by God, they respect us. Your 5-2 is a judge of quality. He knows what he's buying, and it's only the finest type of Englishman that you meet out here. I often feel like an ambassador, Barlow. It's a responsibility, I can tell you, and in various degrees every Englishman out here shares it. We can't all be at the top of the tree, but we are all men of responsibility. You never find an Englishman among the underdogs, except in England, of course. That's understood out here, thanks to the example we've set. There are jobs that an Englishman just doesn't take. We had an unfortunate case some years ago of a very decent young fellow who came out as a scene designer. A clever chap, but he went completely native. Wore ready-made shoes and a belt instead of braces. Went about without a tie, ate at drugstores. Then, you'll believe it, he left the studio and opened a restaurant with an Italian partner. Got cheated, of course. The next thing he was behind a bar shaking cocktails. Appalling business. We raised a subscription at the cricket club to send him home, and the blighter wouldn't go. Said he liked the place, if you please. That man did irreparable harm. He was nothing less than a deserter. Luckily, the war came. He went home then, all right, and got himself killed in Norway. He atoned, but I always think, how much better not to have anything to atone for, eh? Well, you're a man of reputation in your own line, Barlow. If you weren't you, you wouldn't be here. I don't say poets are much in demand, but they're bound to want one sooner or later, and when they do, they'll come to you cap in hand, if you haven't done anything in the meantime to lose their respect. See what I mean? Well, here I am talking like a Dutch uncle while the missus is waiting for her dinner. I must toddle. So long, Frank. I've enjoyed our talk. Wish we saw you more often at the cricket club. Goodbye, young man. And just remember what I've been saying. I may look like an old duffer, but I know what I'm talking about. Don't move. Either of you. I can find my way.
Mr. Joy Boy is an object of hero worship to his female assistants, especially Amy, who is too young and too inexperienced to see him for the talentless fraud he really is. Flattered by her attention, Joy Boy leads her on, even convincing himself he has feelings for her. Caught in a love triangle with her boyfriend Dennis, who secretly works at the neighbouring pet cemetery, and the flashy Mr. Joy Boy, Amy seeks advice from a newspaper agony aunt with dire results. Waugh wrote The Loved One following a stay in Hollywood, working on a screenplay adaptation of Brideshead Revisited, and he used it to express some of his scorn and antipathy towards aspects of life in the States. Using the mortuary business as a vehicle, he lays bare the excesses and false realities of life in Hollywood. He picks apart the use of language. The loved one of the title is a euphemism for dead relative. And the bizarre culture surrounding much of life and death in what is very much a foreign country. The idea of the happy hunting ground, a pet cemetery that mimics its human counterpart and even uses non-sectarian pastors for its burial services, was unthinkable to most readers in Britain at the time, and even today adds a surreal quality to the story.
The Lover's Seat. This seat is made of authentic old Scotch stone from the Highlands of Aberdeen. In it is incorporated the ancient symbol of the Heart of Bruce. According to the tradition of the Glen's lovers who plight their troth on this seat and join their lips through the Heart of the Bruce, shall have many a canty day with one another, and morn totter down hand in hand, like the immortal Anderson couple. The words of the prescribed oath were cut on the step, so that a seated couple could conveniently recite them. Till a' the seas gang dry, my dear, and the rocks melt with the sun, I will love thee still, my dear, while the sands o' life shall run. The fancy caught the popular taste, and the spot is much frequented. Little there tempts the lounger. The ceremony is over in less than a minute, and on most evenings couples may be seen waiting their turn while strange accents struggle with a text, which acquires something of the sanctity of mumbo-jumbo on the unpracticed lips of Balts and Jews and Slavs. They kiss through the hole and yield place to the next couple, struck silent as often as not with awe at the mystery they have enacted. There is no birdsong here. Instead, the skirl of the pipes haunts the pines, and the surviving forest growth of heather. Here, a few days after her supper with Mr. Joyboy, a newly resolute Amy led Dennis, and, as he surveyed the incised quotations which, in the manner of whispering glades, abounded in the spot, he was thankful that a natural abhorrence of dialect had prevented him from borrowing any of the texts of his courtship from Robert Burns. They waited their turn, and presently sat side by side on the double throne. "Till a' the seas gang dry, my dear," whispered Amy. Her face appeared deliciously at the little window. They kissed, then gravely descended, and passed through waiting couples without a glance.
"What is a canty day, Dennis?"
"I've never troubled to ask. Something like Hogmanay, I expect."
"What is that?"
"People being sick on the pavement in Glasgow."
"Oh. Do you know how the poem ends?" "Now we maun totter down, John, and hand in hand we'll go, and sleep the gither at the foot, John Anderson, my Joe." "Dennis, why is all the poetry you know so coarse? And you talking of being a pastor?"
"Non-sectarian, but I inclined to the Anabaptists in these matters. Anyway, everything is ethical to engaged couples." After a pause, Amy said,
"I shall have to write and tell Mr. Joyboy and someone else."
She wrote that night. Her letters were delivered by the morning post. Mr. Slump said, "Send her our usual letter of congratulation and advice."
"But Mr. Slump, she's marrying the wrong one."
"Don't mention that side of it."
Unlike most of War's books, it is hard to find one truly sympathetic character in this novel. Dennis is a failed poet who plagiarises other writers' work to seduce Amy. She is gullible, weak-willed, and has a level of intelligence only marginally above that of idiot. Incapable of forming any opinion on her own, she is easy meat for the unscrupulous men who surround her. The agony aunt is in fact two men, masquerading as the Guru Brahmin, one of whom begins drinking as soon as he arrives for work. Mr. Joyboy is in a league of his own. Deluded, arrogant and selfish, he maintains the facade of wealth and success at work, whilst living with his elderly mother, a bitter, domineering woman who hates living in California and wants to return home. A contemporary review of the novel from the New York Times said, "Rarely in fiction has such execrably bad taste and such cruel wit been combined in one short satirical novel." I totally agree and recommend the book wholeheartedly.
100,000 strokes affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium.
Hang on. Slow down. One tablespoon.
Remember, any more than one tablespoon could kill you. Any less than one tablespoon could kill you.
Right, what was
the recipe?
Oh,
if you would like a more simple solution, you can always call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989.
All right,
or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989, or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Pharma Nord, I wonder?
pharmanord.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondents from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.
You're listening to Jenny Finch, crime writer, scholar, and commentator, with another classic Book of the Month on Southside Broadcasting.
So special time now as far as Book of the Month is concerned, because we connect with a poet, a general creative writer, who has indeed been on Book of the Month when it's been in Lincoln, of course. He's spent time with Jenny Finch and a variety of other things. Of course, we're talking about Michael Blackburn. Michael, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Mike.
The Loved One, an Anglo-American tragedy.
Indeed.
Your thoughts?
It's such a wonderful read. It's sort of quintessential Evelyn Waugh, which I'd advise everybody to read it. First of all, because it's nice and short, but also because the style is absolutely immaculate.
Now, you're quite a keen fan, clearly, of writing technique and aspects within that. And you said something a couple of weeks ago, which I was really impressed with. You said if you wanted to demonstrate a masterclass to contemporary writers of how to actually say so much with such economy and such precision, you could do far worse than actually take a lesson from Evelyn.
Indeed. And this is one of those books. Another one, obviously, is Decline and Fall. He has the ability to say something very precisely in very few words, but to do it in a way that is quite, it really sort of strikes home. And I think that talent is, you know, aptly and kind of greatly in evidence in this short book. I mean, a lot of it's actually very funny. Obviously, it's funny in a very cruel kind of way, which is another hallmark of Evelyn Waugh. I mean, I'm just thinking of that bit where our hero, if we can call him that, is organising the funeral for his patron, Sir Francis, who had hanged himself, and he's talking to the young lady the funeral place, and she said, "Was his face much disfigured?" And he just says, "Hideously." And then she just carries on as normal. "That is quite usual." And it goes on like that. It's so kind of matter of fact, but it says so much about the people and the culture, and the kind of clash of the two cultures at the time.
In terms of that Anglo-American cultural clash that we've said, and clearly you can actually say, you know, two countries separated by a common language, I think it was an Oscar Wildeism, but in terms of that, do you feel that war is still well considered as almost having resonance in our contemporary age? Because after all, this was written quite some time ago.
Yes, it was written after the war. I think there are still elements at work in the kind of Anglo-American relationship. I think there's no doubt about it. There's a kind of love-hate relationship still with British people about America. I mean, we love the products of America. We love the films, the music, the kind of romance of the open road and all of that kind of stuff. And we love the kind of wealth. But on the other hand, there's a kind of snobbery as well, isn't there, about it? It's sort of that it's rather tacky as well, that it's somewhat spiritually empty or that it's cheap and so on. So I think those elements are still around. One of the things that struck me is that if you want to look for a kind of hero in the book, because it's not really full of very admirable characters, the one person I did quite like was the bloke who runs the Happier Hunting Ground, Mr. Schultz, because very early on he's talking to our hero Dennis about the differences between the people who bury their relatives with great, at great cost and flamboyance, but who dispose of their pets, without any thought at all. And he's sort of saying, we can't charge very much for that because they just want to get rid of their dead pets very quickly. And he said, it's really terrible because they spend all this time on these terrible relatives who they've hated all their lives, and yet they don't spend as much on these pets that have loved them without kind of qualification and have stood by them, etc. So a lot of it's to do, I think, with the idea of what's real or authentic and what's fake, and I think that's one of the key themes, obviously, that runs through it.
Michael, we're going to return now to our studio team. We know you're going to be somewhere in North Wales when this is actually being committed to the airwaves for posterity, but thank you very much for your time, and hopefully we'll connect with you again in the very near future.
Yes, hope to do that very much, Alex.
Excellent. There we are, Michael Blackburn there, and we welcome a newbie to Book of the Month, Ryan Reid. Hiya, Ryan.
Hi, yourself. Thank you very much for having me.
And indeed, as Dennis Gore actually said earlier, the perfect surname for the Book of the Month in many ways, Ryan Reid. And he does. And you've obviously read Evelyn Waugh's The Loved One. Your thoughts?
I thought it was a fantastically funny novel in a, like I say, a cruel way. It's the best type of comedy in a way, and you've got to love a tragedy sometimes, haven't you? I just love how separate it is from reality. I mean, with it calling dead bodies, loved ones and stuff like that, it's sort of a commentary on what the American life is in a way, and how the general people
tacky
feel.
And empty, yeah. As Michael was actually saying that. Did you have any heroes? I mean, Michael seemed to address Mr. Schultz as one of his favourites there.
I don't think I particularly had a hero. If I had to pick a favourite character, I quite liked Mr. Joyboy in a bad way. I liked him because he was sort of shallow, and he was a mama's boy, and I did really like him, but in a bad way, if that makes sense.
Clearly being set in an Undertaker's, the connections with Brian Fuller's series Pushing Daisies springs to mind. That was a much more lighter take on the whole sort of sequence. But this almost literary necrophilia that Waugh encapsulates, was it something which, as a 21st century reader, did you sort of think, yeah, that's pretty much, it still has something to say today? Or was it a case of, I don't know, it seems like reading Thomas Hardy and Tess of the D'Urbervilles?
No, I think it's very much relevant in today's world. I think the sort of that shallow mindset on life and the detachment from reality is very relevant in the life we live in right now, especially in places like America and stuff like that.
We were talking before the show about how one of your favourite novels was The Great Gatsby, yeah. And sort of stands very much at the forefront. How do you think War compares? Because clearly Loved One written about, 15 years or so, thereabouts, after the Great Gatsby, post-World War II and so on. Any thoughts on that?
I think when you compare them, really, the sort of theme of detachment is sort of there in a sense it is. Because on one, you've got, obviously, the detachment from reality will calm loved ones to dead bodies and stuff like that. And with The Great Gatsby, you've got the detachment from wealth and what wealth actually means in a social context. And, yeah, I think they're very comparable, really, on the American life.
Jenny, two sort of views there, and kind of giving a holistic feel to past books of the month that have been put together and structured. Why did you go for War and The Loved One?
I've always liked Evelyn Waugh. I particularly like his use of language. There are moments in Brideshead Revisited where I just stop and stare at a beautiful sentence. The Loved One has been one of my favourites for years. It's one of the few books that makes me laugh out loud because of its cruelty, because of the humour. And I love the way you have this incredible picture of a very shallow lifestyle, and yet it's like walking on thin ice over sharks, because as you go further and further into this shallow lifestyle, you know at some point someone's going to go through, and the consequences are as dire as if you took life seriously. And I think that's quite an important message. I also like the way, I think there was a change in use of language between Fitzgerald and Waugh, in that this is actually relatively easy for a modern reader to read, whereas you take just a few years back and the actual language itself, the construction, is much more complicated. This reads like a late 20th century novel, and it's easy to get into, but it's deeply profound underneath.
Did you have any thoughts on Michael's review of the text?
I think it was immaculate, as usual.
Oh, my word.
I think he was exactly right.
Well, it's pretty much approaching that time where we need to actually quantify the qualitative and produce that. We didn't actually ask Michael. I suspect he would be in the nines, as far as I'm aware. Maybe a little bit higher from that point of view. It's where we actually give a score out of 10. And Ryan, your first book of the month, your first chance to actually put your particular mark on posterity even. Even Waugh's The Loved One, what would you give it out of 10?
I'd probably give it a 9. I think that's probably sufficient.
A 9. I think I'll go 9 as well, because it's always nice to effectively have a bit of positivity in terms of the whole sequence. And Mr. Joyboy, as you rightly said, didn't really quite develop it. I quite like the General Major, as you can tell by the accent. Very good indeed. But then again, a different time entirely. And Jenny, from yourself?
I'll give it 9. I would have given it 10, but I wanted more. It's too short.
Would you consider writing a sequel?
No. I consider that presumptuous, well, and I could never master that language as well as he does.
In these days, as we've said in previous programmes, clearly where novels are given sequels and ad infinitum, I thought there's always the opportunity there. So we move well into the 21st century with the next particular superhero number. Would you like to share what Bailey Prize-winning text we're going to be looking at for the July, August, the summer book of the month in many ways?
Yes, next month we're going to be looking at Naomi Alderman's The Power.
You're listening to Jenny Finch, crime writer, scholar, and commentator, with another classic book of the month on Southside Broadcasting. Crime writer, that means she authors the crimes, she's the mastermind behind the crimes? Oh, is this recording?